Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
Chase Thomas podcast. The Chase Thomas podcast. My nephew needs me to record. See, I already hate it.
All right. Hello and welcome back to a Monday evening edition of the Chase Thomas podcast. I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by old friend of Bleacher Report. It's Sean Hyken. Sean, good evening, sir. How are you?
I'm doing all right, Chase. Good to be with you as always.
Good to check back in, man. There's a lot of NBA stuff going on. As of right now, I have behind me going on the Sixers-Mavs game. We had Luka
Doncic.
Yeah,
I have that on, too. That's
That
one wasn't very close, but
no.
Certainly a lot of implications for, you know, seeding and stuff. So
yeah. Well, we'll get into seeding and all that kind of stuff on this very podcast. Luka, before the game, just furthering his torturous actions for my well-being by volleying a basketball over to himself and then just sinking a just nasty, gnarly shot from the tunnel with ease and then dance.
Yeah,
I saw that. Yeah, it was, I hate it, Sean. I'm not having a good time. Twitter, just the way Hawks fans talk about Trey. No, well, I'll save that because we're going to talk about the Hawks in this podcast.
We could talk about the Luka Trey thing at some point too.
One of these days.
That's something you want to do, it's your show.
My name is on the show. I guess I am the pilot here, but you are a co-pilot on this very episode, Sean. Don't forget, folks, if you like listening to Sean and I talk basketball on this very podcast, or just like this podcast, go check out the podcast wherever you get your podcasts, at Apple, Spotify, wherever. BlueWirePods.com is the place to check out all of Blue Wire's great shows across the platform. So go do that if you have not already, and leave us a 5-star rating and review on Apple. If you're listening via iPhone right now, go do it. It's great. Helps the show continue to grow. Some stuff I wanted to focus on this episode, Sean. The Clippers winning 5 straight, starting to really ground out into form. The Hawks winning 7 of 10. The impact of the James Wiseman injury. Had Wes Goldberg on this episode that folks will be able to listen to later on to get into the granular aspect of the Warriors season. The Bulls, team you're very familiar with, not piling up the wins post buyers at the trade deadline, and then Jokic sitting by himself after a crazy run by the Boston Celtics over the weekend during a team huddle, and some other stuff around the NBA that I want to pick your brain about. First, though, the Clippers, they won 5 straight, Sean Hyken. How have they figured stuff out right now?
I mean, I think this is just one of those stretches. They'll always have these stretches, and this was kind of true last season too, where it'll just look like they have everything figured out. And I think a lot of it is earlier on in the season. Paul George and or Kawhi were out with different things. You know, they've done some, like Rondo is now kind of been there for a little bit. He's started to get integrated a little bit. The Patrick Beverley injury hurts them, but I mean, so far, I mean, we're kind of at the point of the season where, you know, we're starting to see what teams are. And, you know, lately the Clippers have been good. You know, whether that carries over into the postseason, we will see. But, you know, lately it's been good.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, the point guard situation there, I don't know if it's going to get resolved this season. There was a lot to be made about Kevin O'Connor talking about Paul George's toe on the mismatch last week. And that got picked up by a lot of places about, like, he needs 2 months of just no running on that toe to get it back to normal. And that's obviously not going to happen. So I wonder two things with the Clippers. One, who is going to be their closing lead guard? Because Pat Bev's going to be out for a month, and we'll see if he's still the closing guy. Because it's clear they don't want, I don't think they necessarily want to close with Pat Bev. They flipped Lou for
Isn't
Rondo.
That why they went out and got Rondo? Because he has experience in those situations. Isn't that kind of the idea behind that move?
Yeah, but you also paid Luke Kennard. And, like, he's been coming on as of late, and he's been out of the rotation at some points this season. Like, it's just really hard to get a good read on what the Clippers want to do there. I don't know. I think the top-level talent is still strong. I think they have more of a playoff-friendly roster than they did last year with just almost too many guys and too many role players who used to be the league guys before the stars came in, and obviously the behind the scenes issues there was well documented from friend of the pod, Jovan Pua of The Athletic. It seems different. It seems more of like a top championship level team. Ty Lue has them playing a different style. We're getting more Paul George's lead ball handler. But does the toe stuff worry? Does Paul George's injury question still lingering trouble you at all?
I did see that Kevin O'Connor report, and yeah, I mean, toe stuff really, that stuff is kind of underrated. It's because it's not, you know, it's not a knee or it's not, you know, the shoulder like he had last couple years ago in the playoffs, but that stuff can linger, and that stuff, especially for someone like him, where a lot of what he does is based on being athletic and like being able to move quickly to defend people and then also being able to jump as a shooter. And yeah, that could hurt them. I will say I'm a little bit lower on the Clippers than you are, just because it's pretty, I mean, there are some differences with the roster, but I've still seen some things just based on stuff that they've said over the course of this year that I still just don't love.
Like
in
what?
Terms of just different. They're like a couple months ago, I forget which game it was, but there was a game where, like, then, you know, Paul George came out and basically said, like, you know, we still don't have the chemistry that we, you know, it was basically a lot of stuff that kind of has led me to believe that it's really not that different than it was last year. And I think after the way the playoffs went last year, I kind of need to actually see them get to the conference finals before I'm ready to actually get talked into them as, you know, the top team or one of the top, like, I probably out of the top four or five teams in the West, I think I would probably fear them the least as playoff. I don't even think that's that hot of a take.
That is a hot take. In a playoff series? I think it's a hot take.
I don't think it's that hot of a take.
Make the case of the Sun being more fearful of the Suns and the Jazz in a playoff series than Kawhi Leonard and Paul George.
I think they're well coached. I mean, Ty Lue's a good coach, but I like what Monty's done in Phoenix.
Yeah.
I trust Chris Paul more than I can really count on, you know, those other guys. I mean, I know obviously Kawhi has had that history before. You know, he's won two championships, but he also, you know, he still misses games. He's still, you know, we don't know what is.
I mean, it's been clear that he's never going to be a 100% player ever again. Like, they've,
well, right,
that's why
no,
he
but,
plays
so
40 games, and that's just
and
why.
So I'm still,
yeah.
And so I'm still, like, I still, I just, I don't know, I just, the Clippers just seem unserious to me.
Well, they're going to seem unserious until they do it in the playoffs, right? Like,
well, right. And so I'm that's
so what are they supposed to do?
And I think the Rondo thing is going to help them in that regard. And I know that there's a segment of, I mean, I follow some of the Clippers, like, bloggers who are, like, just very dismissive of the idea that Rondo could even help them at all, citing, you know, whatever his net rating was with the Hawks But
okay,
like,
the Hawk stuff is just nonsense, and it's just the difference with like Lou is actually the perfect Trey replacement player. Like Brandon Goodwin was kind of in that role, and we'll get to the Hawks. But like, yeah, no, Rondo was god awful with the Hawks, but also it's just not what he's supposed to be doing at this point. Like
the whole point of Rondo is that he does what he does in the playoffs, and it's actually hilarious to watch because it's not like he like necessarily even does anything different in the playoffs. He just kind of tries.
Yeah,
and you saw, I mean. People kind of, and it's kind of funny now, people are, after he did it with the Lakers, it never counts until you do it with the Lakers, because nothing actually happens in the NBA unless you do it with the Lakers. Anything else you do, it doesn't count.
That's true.
In the eyes of a lot of people. But I saw it in Chicago. I saw it in the, with the New Orleans series against Portland a couple of years before ago. And, you know, he was huge for them in the playoffs last year, the Lakers. And so I just... I think it's gonna like I'm seeing people like make the case, you know, some like Clippers writers, not like any of the beat writers, but like some of the, you know, the bloggers who are kind of on these Zooms and are just kind of like that's like their whole thing. I'm seeing people make the case for like playing Reggie Jackson over Rondo in these, you know, in these high leverage situations, and I'm just like, okay, I mean, you could do that if you want, you can. Feel like that's the way to go if you want, but you're standing out for Reggie Jackson, and I don't know if that's really the place you want to go there. But
no, I don't think it's Reggie. I think internally they probably bet on Kennard being that guy, right? Like I think that's why you pay him, and like they had a stronger belief in Kennard. Maybe that was misplaced.
Yeah, I didn't understand them paying him, because the thing with him is I when he's healthy, he's good enough that I think you know he has a chance to be worth that contract. But the whole point of him he didn't not work out in Detroit because he wasn't good. He didn't work out because he was never healthy, and so they trade for him, and before he's played a game for them, they give him $16 million a year, and then he's not, I mean, he's been better lately, but he hasn't even been in the rotation the whole year.
Yeah, it's weird. But I think it's different. I mean, I have the Clippers winning the West, and I have the Nets winning the East.
Yeah, you can go out on a limb and pick the Clippers to win something. You could do that if you want, but mm-hmm.
Who do you have right now coming out of the West? Like if I'm not a big gambling guy, but
are they healthy? Are LeBron and Anthony Davis healthy?
I don't think we're going to get a full, like, I think it's going to be relative. So I think they'll be healthy enough to go in the playoffs, but I don't think they'll be who they were a year ago.
Give me a percentage of how healthy they'll be.
LeBron 100%.
Well, then I think the Lakers win the West.
Okay. See, I think LeBron will be 100. I think AD will be like 70, maybe 60. I think AD is going to go out again.
I think that's enough. I think if they have LeBron and Davis and they're like relatively healthy, I think the Lakers are still the team to beat in the West.
I'm okay with that. I think it's either if it's not the Clippers, it's the Lakers. Like the Suns, I think are the most interesting and most fun to me. I enjoy watching the most. The Jazz, I would just bet all of the money in the world on them not coming out. I'm just mad.
I'm not huge on Utah either. What about Denver?
Denver. I am concerned that Denver is just going to be the team that did everything right. Everything's awesome. They keep doing smart stuff. Like the Aaron Gordon stuff is just smart and it works. And he's fit into his role seamlessly. Porter's coming along. I just think they're still going to keep running into the LA buzzsaw. Where it's just like, they're awesome, love them, they're never getting to the NBA Finals. Like, that's where I'm at with them, and I just feel bad for that franchise. They kind of feel very Grizzlies-esque to me, the grit and grind Grizzlies to me.
Well, the Grizzlies never had a player as good as Nikola Jokic.
No. But, I mean, Marcus was amazing. Conley was amazing.
He was not as good as Jokic. Jokic is like putting up, is like a Wilt Chamberlain. He's having like a Wilt Chamberlain season. Marc Gasol was never an MVP candidate.
No. But he was great. And my point is just that, like, the top end talent of Jokic is still not enough to get by a premier wing like LeBron or Kawhi in a 7-game series. That is my thing. It's just that, like, I think they could beat the Jazz in a 7-game series. I think they could beat just about anyone in the West outside of the two LA teams. Like,
they literally just beat the Clippers in a 7-game series though?
Irrelevant, Sean.
It's not irrelevant.
I know. I don't know. I don't know what it is. I guess I just put so much emphasis on wing talent and high-end wing talent in the playoffs that, like, I don't know. I think the Nuggets have a better shot than the Jazz. I don't
I'm not huge on the Jazz either.
No, the Jazz, I'm just pissed off because they're having an all-time great like swan song season from Mike Conley. Mitchell's awesome. Gobert is just out of this world. They've solved pick and roll basketball. They've solved pick and drop basketball. But the one thing they didn't do as like a fail-safe is just like, what happens in a 7-game series if you get matched up with the Lakers or the Clippers in a 7-game series? Like, who's guarding LeBron? Who's guarding Kawhi? They don't have anybody. Like, Royce O'Neal and Joe Ingles is not... Like, the fact that they're going to ride this out with that wing rotation is just silly to me. Like, we know you're going to run into this. I'm just waiting. Like, it's going to happen. Like, you're going to run into the wing who's just like, oh, you're sending Joe Ingles again on me? Royce O'Neal? Guess what? Game over. Like, this is it. We are taking you down over and over again. You're not doing this. Like, them not going out... I don't care if it's Lou Dort. Them not trying everything they can to get some sort of wing who could stop, like Jeremy Grant, whoever it is, to just kind of help Mitchell and help them on the outside with the defensive side of things. Like, I'm very mad at the Jazz. I'm mad because I think they could have been in this conversation, but because they stood pat and because they're rolling with Bojan and this group, they're not real contenders. Like, they're just not.
I mean, you're a lot stronger anti-Jazz than I am. I just don't like them as much as some of those other teams. I'm not angry that they didn't upgrade the Bojan spot, but.
Well, I have a question. Do you think the Jazz would get out of the East with ease?
Everyone's experienced the pain of dropped calls and internet outages, especially working remotely this last year. So here's the question. If you're the telco company, how do you help create better experiences for customers? Simple. ServiceNow digital workflows can help solve network problems faster and provide real-time status updates so customers aren't left in the dark. That's probably why ServiceNow workflows have helped telco companies see an increase in customer satisfaction. But proactive customer communications only half the battle. With a single view of your back, middle, and front office operations, ServiceNow workflows also eliminate silos, keeping teams more in sync and more productive. With our scalable services, companies assure a better experience for both customers and employees on a single platform, the Now Platform. So how do you help provide a better network experience for customers? With ServiceNow for telecommunications to help streamline network operations. Whatever your business is facing, let's workflow it. ServiceNow.
How healthy are the Nets three guys?
They're all healthy. KD is the only one who's at like 80.
Then no.
No, I don't think so either. Remember when people were like, I'm glad I have the receipts in this podcast. I'm like, the Nets will upset. I don't like the Nets are winning the East. Like, it's over. Like, this is over. Like, if even two of their main three are healthy, it's over.
I don't think two of the main three is enough.
Ooh.
Okay. One of them. The thing is, one of the two that's healthy has to be Harden.
Mm-hmm.
If Kyrie is your number two guy, I'm not. If your two guys are Kyrie and 80% of Durant, I'm not necessarily picking you over, you know, Milwaukee or Philly or one of those. I mean, I think Brooklyn's a heavy favorite, but I don't think it's a wrap by any means. And I also just I don't like the energy since I don't like the vibes since the LaMarcus Aldridge signing.
What do you mean?
He's looked good. I don't like the vibes. I feel like you bring him in, he's basically going to take all of DeAndre Jordan's minutes, and now in a vacuum, he's a better basketball player than DeAndre Jordan. DeAndre Jordan was also the one that basically was the part of the package deal to bring KD and Kyrie in. You alienate him. That's a very important pillar of just kind of the whole
being alienated though. Has there been a report that he's upset about it?
I feel like he is though.
I mean, he's getting DMPCDs right now, but
He can't be thrilled that they brought in 35-year-old LaMarcus Aldridge for him, especially when he was basically the guy that helped put the team together because, he was the one that was like, you know, the third guy that got brought in. I feel like they try to do too much with the LaMarcus thing.
Did you read the piece? I forgot who wrote it, on just the Nets being the team that's experimenting the most in the regular season.
Yeah, and I guess when your talent is that high, you can do that.
So that's what I'm thinking with what you were saying, is that I think that's what they're doing. I think they're just experimenting, and I think there's a chance that he's back in the rotation come playoff time.
Maybe. I mean, I don't know. I'm I don't feel strongly enough about, like, I don't think it's over in the East necessarily. I mean, I think they're the heavy favorite, but I'm not going to come out and say, oh, it's over. They're just, you know, the Nets are winning the East. I don't think either conference is decided.
I don't, the West is definitely not. I am so excited for the West. I am the West.
You know what I want? Here's what I want. I know this is probably like the TV network's worst nightmare, but oh my God, if the Lakers are in the play-in, if the Lakers fall down seven, then you might have a scenario where, and I think that, you know, the Lakers in a play-in game are, you know, I think it's probably pretty safe to say if those two are healthy that they would.
Well, if they're in the play-in game, they're not going to the finals. Like, that's just too difficult of a run. That's too difficult of a run. That's too much.
It's not, they're not, that wouldn't, they wouldn't be a typical seven seed, though, because
no.
You have LeBron.
I mean, has there ever been a seven seed that went to the NBA finals? I mean, the last eight seed was the Knicks in 99.
No, I don't believe there has, but. No.
Could, I'm going to bet on them not getting through that gauntlet of the West as a seven seed.
So you have, you know, if they are in seven, then you probably have them, you know, they would play Memphis and then they would play like Golden State or something. I don't know. They whoever you want it to be. Like, it's so fluid right now. But like, you could have a scenario theoretically. This is like within the realm of possibility that you have. The two Lakers play in games, like you have to, or like you have, they have to play, you know, it's LeBron versus Luka and or LeBron versus Steph in the play in. And then
the numbers on that are going to be bonkers if that's what.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I know the TV networks don't really love the idea of the Lakers in the play in because they could just get eliminated if they lose two games in a row. But it could, on the other side of it. And then, you know, if you're the Suns or the whoever's the two seed, whether it's the Suns or the Clippers, hey, congrats on getting the two seed. Now you have to play the Lakers in the first round.
Yeah, that is, I don't know. I think it'd be different as the bubble. If there's no home court, I feel differently about it. But I think the fact that they will be playing in different sites and just having to go to road arenas and things like that, I would err on the side of history not allowing
this. I don't think LeBron really cares about like home court advantage.
They say that until it happens.
I
guess it's the Brady thing. I mean, he did run the table from a wild card spot, and most what we've seen in recent years in the NFL is just that, like, it's always number one and number two seeds. Like, the NFL prides itself on parity, and it's not a parity league at all. And Brady kind of broke that this year. So maybe you're right. Maybe you're right. The Hawks, Sean, they've won 7 of 10. Nate McMillan getting a lot of love since taking over for Lloyd Pierce.
Big Nate McMillan guy. I thought it was stupid when Indy fired him.
Mm-hmm.
I've been very much enjoying them having a better record than Indy.
But I think I don't think the Indy stuff is the coach. I think that's just more of that roster is just kind of a mess. And they keep cycling guys in and out. Now Caris LeVert's in there. They had Oladipo. Brogdon's been in and out. Like, that's just a weird, weird team, man. I don't know. I think Indy is still a work in progress. I don't think they know who they are. Like, they're in such a weird position timeline-wise that I have no idea which way Indy's going to go next offseason. Do you?
No. Not at all. They're one of the teams I probably have the least read on.
I'm the same way. I don't know what they'll do. But, like, Nate McMillan's awesome. He's easy to root for. Part of the reason the Hawks are winning more is they're getting healthy. And Bogey has been crazy. Gallo's playing better. Capella being back. Collins being in there. Tony Snell being great. He just got hurt, so that's not great. But, like, not having DeAndre Hunter, still kind of a problem. And I'm not sure if he's ever going to be back this season. There's more problems there, and the Achilles stuff with Cam's pretty scary, but the vets are playing well, and vets playing well means you win NBA games. That's kind of where I'm at with this group. Trey also playing really well, but do you think, because I was texting with some buddies about this afternoon, playoffs start today, we get Hawks Heat round one, like the Hawks are getting swept.
I just saw the Heat last night. They came to Portland. Mm-hmm. So that team's good.
Yeah, they're very.
That's another team where, like, they're not going to get a high enough seed that they get looked at. It's going to be just like last year in the bubble. And I mean, I know there's talk that, like, the bubble is, you know, the bubble was kind of a unique thing, and that's why the Heat made the finals. But I'm not a gambling guy either. But I don't know. The Heat are kind of interesting to me.
I think it's going to be very hard for them to go back-to-back, to run it back. But I will say, the talent they have, I'm kind of worried about the Victor Oladipo stuff that I want to ask you about in a second, but...
I was never that. See, I was never, like, expecting much from Oladipo. So, and to me, anything they get from him is a bonus, considering they gave up, like, almost nothing to get him.
True, true.
I'm not really even factoring Oladipo into it. They looked pretty damn good last night without him, so...
Well, that's the whole thing. It's just, like, Jimmy's going to be on Trey in that series. Like, you're going to put Bam just on Collins or whoever, and that's it. Like, they're just locking them down. Like, the Heat just have Iguodala. They have so many guys that they're just going to throw at Trey. Trey is going to be in his first playoff series. He's going to be overwhelmed. It's going to be a nightmare. I think it's going to be really, really bad. And I think the Hawks, if they stay in this 4 or 5 spot, are getting stomped by the Heat. And I want them out of it.
That leads to another question. I mean, you're more tuned in on the Hawks than I am. But is Luka going to go 3 for 3 in getting GMs fired that didn't take him?
No, I think Schlink's good for another year because they're going to make the playoffs.
Do you think the whole thing? I just feel like they've tried that, and I don't know how much of that is him and how much of it's ownership, but like, I just feel like they shortcutted it so much. And I mean, I did think it was kind of not great the way that they did Lloyd Pierce, but then Nate has been so much better than him that now in retrospect you're just like, okay, I kind of get it. But
I wrote about it before the season. I'm like, you don't bring Nate in unless like you're planning on firing Lloyd Pierce. Like this,
that
Nate,
was kind of, you would think.
If I'm Lloyd, I'm like, no, you're not bringing in Nate. Like, what? No.
Well, what I heard was that Nate was actually had to be talked into taking the interim job after they fired Pierce. That's what I've heard. The thing is, I mean, I had the same reaction when they brought Nate in. But the thing is, the other guy who's kind of like that is Alvin Gentry in Sacramento. I was like, when they hired him as the lead assistant, I was like, okay, so they're going to fire Luke Walton at some point. That's what that hire is. And then they just aren't doing it, even though the Kings aren't very good.
I think we can wait on that one. I still think Luke Walton's getting fired.
Not during the season.
No. Gentry, has he coached the Kings before?
I don't know. He's coached a lot of teams. I don't think Alvin would take the permanent job after the season. I think they brought him in to have an adult if they did it in season, but I think he's kind of semi-retired at this point.
Mm.
I had heard before, even last season, that if he had gotten fired during the year in New Orleans, he wouldn't be that upset about it because he was kind of ready to be done.
Interesting. Do you think Trey is now underrated? Because Hawks Twitter, very upset. They think Trey is now underrated based on that ESPN 25 for 25, whatever it was.
Who's ahead of him? I don't have.
It was like De'Aaron Fox, and like the only person ahead of him that I think he's better than on that list was De'Aaron Fox. I think Trey is better than De'Aaron Fox. I think.
Asking me who I would rather have on my team for the next 5 or 6 years, I would pick De'Aaron Fox.
Really?
Think that's even that close.
What does De'Aaron Fox do better than Trae Young?
It's not about a single skill right now. I just get the vibe that people don't like playing with Trae that much.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not a huge Trae guy. Obviously he's very talented. It's just that's not somebody I would have. I would be like, okay, this is the guy I want to build around if I were the one. Like I don't know. I'm not a huge Trae guy.
I just want his dad on the podcast because he tweeted under someone who was talking about Trey about like these people still think that Luka was coming to Atlanta with like a laughing face emoji. And I need answers. I need to know if Luka was like, if you take me and don't trade me, then I'm not coming. I need to know
I
that.
I somehow don't think that's accurate. I don't think Luka was going to do that.
I don't think so either. But the fact that he was pointing that out, I was like,
Is Trey's dad trying to be LeVar Ball? Is that basically what's going on there?
I don't know. He like definitely name searches.
Yeah.
So I'll see him pop up and I'm like, interesting. But also there are just like, there's a lot of weirdos with the Trey following and the Hawks fans just very insecure because we're good. Like the thing about the Hawks is like, they just have this, everybody's out to get us. The national media hates us, blah, 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 blah.
Small market energy.
Yeah. It's just, it's embarrassing. And I criticize them all the time for this.
There's a lot of that in Portland too, believe it or not.
Is it? I guess the Dame stuff. Yeah, of like, oh, everyone's obsessed with Steph and blah blah blah, and we have Dame.
Well,
and he's
it's
awesome.
Probably just a lot of right. I mean, it's a lot of, and it's actually kind of funny. It's gone over the last 24 hours. It's gone from people aren't giving Dame enough credit as MVP, as an MVP candidate, to now it's the Blazers just lost to Miami. Like, you're gonna move to Seattle in 2 years because, like, the team is in such disarray. Like, there's some wild swings. Honestly, the Nets and the Clippers have underrated SME for being in huge markets. And maybe it's because they're, like, the second team in both of those cities. But there's a whole lot of, you know, just from the fans of those teams that I follow, there's a whole lot of, the media doesn't respect us and nobody gives us credit. And it's like, you have Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. And you're fine.
Yeah. I don't get any of that. It bothers me. It drives me nuts. But, like, if I had to ask fans, like, there's still people that think that, like, both teams won the trade. The Luka Trey stuff. And I'm like, Luka's number one on this list. He's number one. Like, Luka is number one. There is no question on this planet that Luka Doncic is not a much better basketball player than Trey Young. But there are still a humongous subset of Hawks fans that are like, no, they're about even. What?
Because it's not fun to feel like your team made the wrong decision when it comes to a generational talent. There were still, up through like 2011 or 2012, there were still Blazers fans relitigating Odin Durant, even when it was clear, you know, that one of their careers was going to go one way and the other one of their careers was going to go the other way. Like, there were still people relitigating that.
Yeah, I don't get it. It's like, it's one of those things. It is what it is. It's like, they still got the second best player in the draft. Like, I still think Trey is the second best player in that draft. Huh?
Who else was in that draft?
Ayton, Bagley, let's see, who else is in that draft?
I feel like there's somebody else that I would rather have.
You feel that way, but who else is in this draft?
What year was that, 18?
Yeah, Jaren Jackson, who's injured all the time. It's not Jaren. Bamba, Carter, no. Sexton, Knox, Bridges. Oh, SGA.
Oh, yeah.
It's SGA. Porter was in it, but Porter still wait and see, but that's about it. Looking up and down this list, Jalen Brunson.
I do not like the way that Michael Porter was acting in the bubble over the summer about the pandemic. That's a red flag to me.
Yeah. I don't know, but the list, I had the list in front of me, and you can tell me. Sean Hyken, NBA writer, one of the best NBA writers. You can tell me if you would pick Trey over any of these guys who were ranked in front of him, okay?
Yeah.
Luka Doncic.
No.
Zion.
No.
LaMelo.
No.
Also, I will say, LaMelo at three was the most preposterous part of this list. Like, he's not, like, him at three is preposterous. Well, let's just wait for the guys beneath him, and you'll be like, okay, Donovan Mitchell.
No.
Jason Tatum. Like, you would rather have Tatum and Mitchell over the next 5 years than LaMelo Ball. Like, no question. Especially Tatum. Like, Tatum's absolutely. Okay. I like it. We disagree.
Maybe.
Okay. De'Aaron Fox.
That's the other one where I'm just like, yeah, I don't know. I think I might still rather have him than Trey.
Ben Simmons.
Know. I'd rather have Ben Simmons than Trey.
Devin Booker.
Yeah.
Bam Adebayo.
Absolutely.
SGA.
Yeah.
Brandon Ingram.
That might be where I start to say, yeah, Trey might be. Yeah. I just want to see Ingram on a different team. I don't think him and Zion fit together.
Jaylen Brown.
I'd rather have Jaylen Brown.
Jamal Murray. Is interesting.
That's, yeah. I might lean Murray.
Okay. Michael Porter.
Trey.
Ja Morant.
Definitely Ja.
And then Trey coming in at number 16.
Yeah, I might move him above Michael Porter, and that's it.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair.
Yeah.
The Warriors, they lost James Wiseman for the season. Kevon Looney inserted back in there. Do you think the Warriors still maintain a playoff push without Wiseman?
I think they can get in the play-in. I don't know if they necessarily are going to get further than the play-in, but I mean, I think they'll still be in that 8 through 10. But I'm feeling very vindicated about a column that I wrote on Christmas Day when they got blown out by the Bucks, which was coming off the heels of opening. That was on Christmas Day. They get blown out by Milwaukee, coming off of opening night when they get blown out by the Nets. And I just feel like for the last basically 2.5 years, ever since the finals against the Raptors, because of how dominant they were over that 5-year run, they've basically just gotten all of the benefit of the doubt about every single thing that happened to them. And just everybody would just kind of assume, oh yeah, they'll be fine. They'll be back. This is all just part of the plan. They're still light years ahead, where like they Clay tears his ACL and then Durant leaves. And then they still get D'Angelo Russell, like, sign and trade out of that whole thing. And it's like, well, okay, they salvage a trade chip that they can use to trade for somebody else down the line. Like that, like the Warriors are still light years ahead. They can still, like, they're still being smart. They're still going to be in the mix. And then they use that D'Angelo Russell trade chip to get Andrew Wiggins. And when they do that, it's, oh, well, Andrew Wiggins has just been in Minnesota, which is a losing organization, for his whole career. And that's why he hasn't been very good. And, you know, he's just, you know, once he puts it all together, once he figures it out, once he gets in the Warriors system, once he gets in that culture, he's going to be great. And then, no, he's still Andrew Wiggins. And then, you know, Steph breaks his hand 3 games into the season last year. Well, okay, great. Now they can tank for the third, you know, to get the next guy that's going to be like the next cornerstone after Steph and Clay and Draymond age out. Now they can do that. And then, you know, then it turns out they pass on LaMelo Ball. And it's like, yeah. At a certain point, it's like maybe the Warriors' run is just over. Maybe they're not light years ahead.
Well, we were talking about this with Wes this afternoon. Was just that, like, I'm with you, yep. Sean.
Wes is obviously a lot more plugged in with the Warriors than I am, but.
Well, we're all on the same page here, which is that, like, the idea that they're just, like, Clay coming off what he's coming off is just going to fix all these problems.
I thought Clay would be fine off the ACL because he's not that much based on his athleticism. I was not that worried about him coming off the ACL, whereas he wasn't the kind of guy like, you know, a Derrick Rose where his whole game was based on explosiveness. So when he tore his ACL, it was just kind of over for him. I was not that worried about Clay from that standpoint, but an ACL and an Achilles back to back, and then the next time he plays, he won't have played in 2.5 years. And like, I'm not that worried about Steph aging because, like, you know, Steph, like, shooters are aged so well. I'm not really worried about Steph, but like the Clay thing, then they're so expensive that I'm just like, I think it's just over for him. And I mean, maybe they'll get, I mean,
well, when you say not, over for them, what do you mean?
Like, they're not gonna, this isn't a setback and they're gonna be back to contending for a title next year.
I think if they're operating under the assumption that Clay coming back in will get them back, then yes, I agree. But I would love to know what Bob Myers actually thinks and like what he actually wants to do, because like them keeping that number 2 pick and the timeline with Wiseman versus where this core is at is just so fascinating. And I think they messed up. Like, I think that's just going to clash too much, and they really needed him to be healthy down the stretch here to get more reps for next year. And I don't know, man. Like, I'm with you. I don't think Clay is going to make much of a difference. I think they're still going to be an 8-7 seed with him back with this group. They can't really do all that much with the Wiggins contract and Draymond's money and Steph's money. Like, they don't really have a lot of ways to navigate and really improve this roster. I'm with you. Unless something crazy happens, which is like Wiseman just turns into Joel Embiid next
year.
Well,
it depends on, I mean, the thing about Wiseman, and I mean, he obviously hasn't been very good this year, but I'm not as down on him long term, just because I think that, you know, sometimes, you know, big men take a while to figure it out. It's not always.
But the problem is, like, where are Draymond, Clay, and Steph by the time he figures it out?
I don't think they're good. You and I are on the same page. We both kind of think it's over as far as like this run. But this is just kind of this year and really last year, because even last year, I feel like wasn't part of, you know, part of this realization of, oh, this is over, because it was just, you know, Steph broke his hand. That's not a long-term injury. And now they can tank and get a good pick. And now it's going to be a Spurs situation where they had David Robinson forever, and then they drafted Tim Duncan when he was hurt or something like that. And that, it just has not worked out that way. Clay's hurt again. And it seems like maybe they picked the wrong guy at two. I don't know.
I think the wrong guy was just taking any rookie. Like, I think what they should have done is...
I think if they had picked LaMelo, it would have worked out okay.
Mm.
LaMelo's good enough, I think he would have been able to fit anywhere.
Interesting. I don't know. I don't think it would have gone as well. I could be wrong.
I mean, I think it worked out great for him that he ended up in Charlotte, but I think that the pure talent play would have been...
I think Haliburton would have been awesome for them. I think Haliburton actually made the most sense for them.
I wouldn't have taken him too, though.
Does it matter if he's still going to be a great player? Like, he's still...
I would have taken LaMelo.
Mm. I don't know. I think it's just the timelines and how important he'd be for that team right away. But, you know, we'll have to see what they do. I'm just fascinated to see how their offseason goes. Vooch, the Bulls, team you're very familiar with. They're not winning basketball games. They're probably not going to make the playoffs. What's going on with your Chicago Bulls, Sean Hyken?
They still have a lot of bad players in the rotation. Like, they're still playing Denzel Valentine and Kobe White, like, real minutes.
Is it over for Kobe White?
I don't think he's very good.
Yeah.
I don't want to say it's over for a guy who's, like, 20. But I just, as, like, a core guy to build around, I'm out.
Yeah, we were all universally praising what they did at the deadline, but I think
long term it's a good play. I liked the move, but I mean I don't think it changes much this year, but I like the move going forward.
Yeah. I don't know. I want to see, like, do you think they turn around by the end of the season, or do you think this is just going to be who they are?
I think they're a playing team.
Okay. Some quick things I want to hit, Sean, around the NBA.
Okay.
Are you excited about Alex Rodriguez and this ownership group taking over the Minnesota Timberwolves?
Hell yeah, I'm very fired. As a Yankees fan, I've always been a huge A-Rod guy.
Really?
Yeah. So I'm into this. I really get, like, I'm excited for, like, their uniforms. You remember those Bucks jerseys from the 90s that had, like, the giant cartoon deer on it?
Yes.
The ones that, like the Ray Allen ones.
Yes.
The Warriors, or not the Warriors, the Timberwolves need to do a jersey that's that, but it's the Centaur painting of himself that A-Rod has at his house, according to, like, that GQ profile. They need to get they just need to lead all the way into it. They need to get Biogenesis as their jersey sponsor. Just go all in. Just lean all the way into being the A-Rod team. Get J-Lo's skincare company to... Did A-Rod and J-Lo actually split up, or, like, are they back together? That's not really my world, but get the A-Rod and J-Lo, get the J-Lo skincare company as, like, a title sponsor on the arena.
I thought you were a big J, I was going to make up a name for them, a big J-Lo, Alex Rodriguez, super couple fan. I thought that was, like, your jam, Sean.
I mean, I was
You're not refreshing TMZ every day, is what you're saying.
I am not.
No?
But.
Are you a big Page Six guy?
No. But
if you had to get, like, in trivia, like, is there any pop culture trivia that you would hit really well?
I mean, I know I'm not totally oblivious to stuff, but
I'm pretty oblivious. Like, I learned today that apparently Brenda Song and Macaulay Culkin were together. Didn't know that was a thing.
I don't know. Yeah, I didn't know that either. But I don't know. I think the A-Rod thing is cool. I think it seems like they're saying all the right things now about wanting to keep the team in Minnesota. So that's good. And I know that Glenn Taylor, like, that was a huge prerequisite for him selling to anybody, because I know he's had offers over the years. So that's cool. That's good. But, like,
well, I want KG a part of this ownership group. Let him get a small stake. Let's get KG in there.
I think once the 2 years, because did you see, like, how the deal is kind of structured?
Yeah.
Where Glenn Taylor is still going to have control over it for 2 years, and then after that it's going to be fully transitioned just to the A-Rod and the Walmart guy that he's in business with. I feel like once Glenn Taylor is out of the mix, because it's him and KG that kind of have the issues with each other. So once Glenn Taylor is out of the mix, then, yeah, you bring KG in, you retire his jersey, you do all that. And, I mean, the other thing that's kind of I saw that, you know, Kat said something today about being, like, excited because he was a huge Yankees fan. He's from New York. He's, like, a huge Yankees fan, a huge A-Rod fan. he's also Dominican, and A-Rod is Dominican. So that's just kind of an interesting, like, that's another way that this could be, like, a connection thing for him. Like, because obviously now that, like, Giannis signed his extension, there's this whole rush to be, like, who's going to be the next superstar that wants out? And they kind of seen as, like, Cat being the logical guy. Just because that team is terrible and they're going to stay terrible and whatever. But, like, I don't know, just any, even, like, small stuff like this that could keep him wanting to be there. Like, that, like, even something like that, I think could be, you know, it could be a good thing. And I mean, A-Rod, the fact that him and this other guy have the money to do this, like, A-Rod's clearly been, like, good with his money, so you don't have to worry about, like, them being cheap or anything. So, I don't know. I think this is a good thing.
Okay. Elise Johnson's story in Brooklyn, is it a good thing?
No opinion. I can't say I've paid that much attention to him.
Kim Birch, is he going to be fun in Toronto?
I have no strong Kim Birch takes. I haven't watched a ton of the Magic.
Did you see that they didn't have a picture for James Ennis in their starting lineup tonight?
No, but that sounds about right.
Would you? Okay, true or false? Dwayne Bacon, Michael Carter-Williams, and James Ennis were their starting backcourt this evening. True or false?
Sounds about right. That sounds about right.
Last thing, and we'll wrap up here, Sean. Bigger concern, injury-wise. Pat Bev for a month for the Clippers, or Victor Oladipo and his ailing knee for Miami?
Beverly, just because, like I said earlier, anything they basically got Oladipo for free, and I kind of, him being there doesn't really change my assessment of the Heat. Anything they get from him is a bonus, whereas the Clippers can't really get to where they need to get to without Beverly, so I would definitely say I'm more concerned about Beverly.
Okay. Sean, what can we check out from you across the internet at Bleacher Report this week?
Just kind of, I mean, I've got a couple things I'm working on kind of for down the line, but, you know, I can't really, you know, bring up here yet, but, you know, just, you know, keep an eye on Twitter, and, you know, I don't know, I'm bad at the self-promotion thing, but just, you know, just keep an eye on Twitter.
Keep an eye on Twitter. I like that. Well, thank you, as always, my good friend, for making the time. I greatly appreciate it, Mr. Hyken. We can follow you at Hyken, keep up with you at Bleacher Report and all across the internet, so go check him out if you have not already. He's one of the best basketball writers in the biz. Sean, thank you as always, and we will talk again soon.
Absolutely.
All right, hello, and welcome back to the Chase Thomas Podcast. I'm still the aforementioned Chase Thomas, and I am joined by one of my favorite basketball writers. It's Wes Goldberg of the Mercury News. Wes, good morning your time. How are you?
I'm good, man. How are you?
I'm very good. It's a good weekend. It looks good. My birthday's coming up this weekend. Going to Asheville.
Oh, what day is your birthday?
April 18th.
Mine's April 16th.
Oh, happy early birthday, sir.
Same to you.
Team Aries. How is this podcast going to go with multiple Aries on this podcast?
It's going to be rough riding.
We're just going to be very stubborn about our opinions. We're going to be very goal chasing. We're going to be like, hey, we're the Rams. We got to do some full on sports talk radio where you and I, we just yell back and forth about our opinions, and then we make all the money in the world. And that's how it all goes. In actuality, because that sounds absolutely awful and something that this podcast is very much not. Wes, I wanted to talk through this Warriors season with you, and especially with Wiseman and Kerr, because it's very interesting. Like, I've become very enamored with Golden State sports in the last few months, just because 49ers Twitter is hilarious with the Mac Jones stuff and how that is just driving them up the wall. Friend of the pod, Evan Sowards, who's on every Monday during the season, just like losing his shit every little nuance about Mac Jones and if that's what they traded up for. Warriors fans, shout out to Andy Liu, about Steve Kerr and what's going on there. And then you have like anonymous quotes about Kelly Oubre potentially. There's just all kinds of great San Francisco sports stuff that I love monitoring right now on twitter.com. But I want to start with Wiseman. What do you know is the latest on James Wiseman and his injury, and what he was becoming before this unfortunate setback happened?
So all we know is that it's a meniscus injury. We don't know if it's a full tear. We don't know if it's an MCL specifically. We don't really know the degree to which he injured this meniscus area in his right knee, but we do know that it's injured, and we do know that he's going to be out for a significant amount of time. And when you go back and track, you know, the kinds of absences that are associated with any sort of meniscus injury, it can be anywhere between 4 and 8 weeks, you know. And there's been instances of earlier returns and much later returns, but I think it's safe to say that James Wiseman's rookie season is most likely over, just given the fact that there's only about 5 weeks left in the season, 19 games left for the Warriors after Monday night. So, you know, that's the most we know. We'll probably know more specifics in the coming days. But like I said, I mean, there's a lot of variances that can happen with a meniscus injury. But for the most part, just given how few games there are, his rookie year is probably over. And it was an up and down rookie season, right? I mean, this is a guy who, you know, missed all of training camp and preseason after a positive coronavirus test. He missed 11 games in the middle of the year with a wrist sprain. He missed another three because of health and safety protocols. And I think Steph Curry said it really kind of said it best after that Rockets game where he got hurt. Was it's like every time this guy takes a step forward, he takes a few steps back. He just gets hit with something else, some sort of other form of adversity. And that's, again, what happened. And it's kind of just a bummer, man. Like, for James Wiseman, for Warriors fans, and he finally seemed to be kind of turning a corner where, you know, he was sort of embraced in this pick-and-roll heavy offense that Steve Kerr started to run over the last, you know, week or so. And Steph Curry was finally healthy after a tailbone injury, and their two-man game started to blossom. And you know, his chemistry with Jordan Poole in the second unit started to develop as something, you know, meaningful and helpful for these Warriors during this playoff push. And they were like leaning more into, hey, James Wiseman, go get us points. And he was giving them points. And you know, he finally strung together his first kind of good stretch of the season. It wasn't like a good game followed by a terrible game. It was two good games in a row followed by a good first half and before he got hurt on a dunk attempt. So
how was he scoring? Just tough. When you say that he was being asked to get the ball and score and do more stuff offensively and giving more opportunities, what was he actually doing in game? What did you notice that they were actually feeding him and how he was scoring?
The lob finishes and the pick and roll. That was everything. I mean, I mentioned before Steve Kerr finally embracing pick and roll in a way that he's been stubborn to do so, you know, throughout his Warriors tenure. And this was and look, by the way, it's not just, hey, you draft James Wiseman number two, start running more pick and roll. There's a chemistry that needs to develop. There needs a timing on the setting of the screens and things like that. And so he finally started doing a better job. Like he was setting screens at the right time. He was getting the right angles. He was learning sort of the nuances of setting screens for Steph Curry, which was not easy because he's a weird player the way that he plays. But the same goes for like Jordan Poole in that second unit. And finally, Wiseman was getting that sort of timing and rhythm developed with these ball handlers, and the results spoke for themselves. He's a vertical threat. He's, you know, finishing on these lob dunks and all these things. He's running the floor better and all these things. So that's really where it came in, because before he was just sort of lost at sea in this offense, and there was a lot of blame to go around for that. And now, and it just sort of felt like over the last week or so that everybody got on the same page. Steve Kerr with the pick and roll offense, James Wiseman with the timing, the ball handlers with the rhythm and the timing and the chemistry. And it finally, and like, that's why I say it looked like he was about to turn the corner before that injury.
Do you think Kevon Looney's helped him at all?
I think Kevon Looney's going to be very helpful for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can make the argument that this is actually better for the Warriors in the short term if the priority is the playoffs, which I have my doubts based on everything that this team has done this year. But
so you don't think they want to be in the playoffs?
I think they would take the playoffs if it showed up. I don't think that they're going out of their way. They say they want to make the playoffs. But, you know, there is a certain amount of wanting it that other teams have that the Warriors don't. Mm-hmm. I don't know that it is the top priority. I know that it's not the top priority for this front office. Nobody's told me that, but it doesn't take a genius to look at what they've done this offseason or this regular season and realize, hey, you know, if the playoffs sort of step, that's fine. Otherwise, you know, we're really going for next year. But that's kind of what makes this injury interesting, right? Is because if the number one priority, and by the way, it was developing James Wiseman, getting him ready to play a meaningful role next year when you try to be a championship team again. Well, he's gone, right? He's out for the season, we can assume. So what becomes the priority? Does it become, all right, let's try to make this playoff push? Because now with Kevon Looney in that starting lineup, he's, you know, you're not dealing with like sort of the raw edges of a rookie with Looney. Like the starting lineup with Wiseman was the worst starting lineup in the league. The starting lineup with Kevon Looney was above average starting lineup. So there you could there's reason to think because of that they have a soft schedule going that they could make a playoff push now. But Looney's only going to play 20, 25 minutes a night, and they don't really have another center after that. It'd be cobbling together lineups with Draymond Green and Juan Toscano-Anderson as small ball five. So see if this ultimately does. It'll end up, I think, helping them at the beginning of halves, but the lack of depth is going to be hard, and then the that scoring void that you lose with Wiseman not getting you, you know, 10 points per game or whatever it is meaningful.
Do you think the criticism and just the response from fans on the changes with this Warriors offense and the lineups that Kerr has used has been valid, or do you think Kerr has kind of gotten a raw deal from fans for the most part this year?
Both. I think the thing that was very valid to me was the not embracing a pick and roll heavy offense, not putting James Wiseman in a position to succeed earlier in the year, expecting Wiseman to sort of be this square peg in the circle hole that is the Warriors offense. In the past, you know, the Warriors used guys like Bogut and Pachulia and David West to, you know, facilitate out of the low block and do these things. But James is a dead passer. I question his feel for the first place. I don't know that he'll ever be a good passer in the way that those other guys were. But he's a much better athlete than those guys were. He's much more there's a lot more, you know, potential to be able to than those guys were. He could shoot the three and those guys can't and couldn't. And this is the guy who you just picked overall. I understand that he's not Kevin Durant. I understand that he's not Steph Curry. I understand there's nothing proven to him, but the level of investment is basically the same in Wiseman as it was in those guys. And so given that, you have to sort of change your offense. And I thought it took him a really long time to do that. To put like you look at guys like LaMelo Ball and Anthony Edwards, and they're being put in positions to succeed mostly because their teams are bad or they were bad. Charlotte just kind of ended up being good, but everything was built around those guys. Where with Wiseman, it was like there was an expectation that he would just fit into what kind of got the Warriors to five straight finals, and that's gonna they're not gonna be able to rely on that anymore. It's just a different type of personnel, Wiseman included. So I thought Steve did deserve some blame for that. I also think some of the waffling of, all right, is he gonna be the starter? Is he gonna be the backup? What do you do? That's partly on him, and it's partly on this front office and ownership. I think it goes all the way up to the top. I really do. There's so much. There was a lot more, I think, stress to develop Wiseman from over Steve Kerr's head, where Steve Kerr's trying to win games right now as the head coach. I think there was a little bit of a push and pull there, and he got into a little bit of that with some reporting, you know, about a month ago. And I think like there's a lot of blame to be spread around for that, but. And then in regards to the lineups and then all this and stuff like that, look, I never really buy into, hey, there's this one lineup that Steve Kerr should play that would fix all of their problems. It's not like Kevin Durant is on the bench and he's not playing him, right? I don't know that there's a lineup that just sort of unlocks this like great playoff version of the Warriors. So that kind of stuff, I just miss me with that. I'm not really into that. You play the good guys as much as possible. Ever, but of a lack of prioritization or a waffling that I think hurt James Wiseman in particular.
Interesting. Do you think this new pick and roll heavy offense is here to stay next year when Clay's back, or do you think Kerr is going to revert back to what he preferred before the season?
Man, I don't know. I feel like we kind of hit this a couple times this year where it looked like Steve Kerr was playing a more pick and roll or simple offense, and then he would kind of go back to Steve Kerr's stuff, you know, within a couple of games. And it does – everything he is saying now says, hey, the pick and roll is here to stay. I want to keep running it. But he hasn't really talked about whether or not he will continue to run it next year. And certainly part of that will – what does Klay Thompson look like next season? What are some of the offseason moves that this team makes? What happens with this draft pick that's coming over from Minnesota potentially? Like, you know, the personnel should ultimately dictate the system that you run.
Yeah.
I would imagine that they're going to try to get James Wiseman involved in more pick and roll and pick and pop stuff going forward. Like, it just sort of has to be – there has to be more of that going forward. And, again, that's what kind of makes this Wiseman thing such a setback, not just for him but for this organization, because you wanted to see over this next – you know, this final stretch – what does an offense look like with more pick and roll? Can James Wiseman really flourish in this sort of offense? Does this work? Can we start to, you know, fold in some more pick and pop stuff and use some of that 3-point shot that he flashed a little bit earlier in the season a little bit more and stuff like that? Now you don't really have like this beta testing. They don't really get it anymore. And now they have to go into an offseason a little encouraged by like the last 2.5 games, 3 games that Wiseman played, but not really with any answers, not anything concrete. And so it's going to be really difficult. And I think it's relatively obvious, Chase, that they should be running more pick and roll. And that, by the way, Steph Curry can handle it. He'll be okay if you put him – he's a great pick and roll ball handler. He's a great isolation scorer.
Well, that's what I was also going to ask. Is that what he wants? Like, he should have a gigantic input in this. It's like, does he want to transition and do more of this? Is he enjoying this more?
I think he is. And look, I think Steph just wants to be productive and win games at the end of the day. I don't think that he's I think he's always going to want to do that off-ball stuff, right? There's a level of Steph Curry that wants to run around the three-point arc and feast on chaos and all that stuff. But you could still incorporate that, right? The difference to me is, do you start a possession with a pick and roll, or do you end the possession with a pick and roll? Because over the years, you know, during the dynasty days, you saw like, okay, when in doubt, when you need a basket, you know, you'll get 10 seconds onto the shot clock, and then, you know, Steph and Draymond will just go in, they'll just launch into some sort of pick and roll and get a bucket out of that. And that's been one of their most efficient versions of offense, not just for the Warriors, but in the NBA over that 5 year span. But it was so often like a last resort. All right, do you just make that the first option? Do you make that the first tool out of the toolbox? That to me would be the difference. You could still get into all the other stuff. You can still get it. Just because you're pick and roll offense doesn't mean that Klay Thompson and Draymond Green and Andrew Wiggins are just parked in the corners while Wiseman and Steph just run sort of high screen and roll action and one of them finishes with a layup. No, you could start your possession with a pick and roll, and then, you know, fine, you could do it with Draymond and Steph. You just start with it, and Draymond finds somebody out of the short on the short roll and kicks out, and then you got Steph giving up the ball and then running around the way he likes to run around and create chaos the way that he does so well. You could still do all those things that we saw the Warriors do. It would just, you know, you sort of initiate those actions in a different sort of way. And that's what I think that the Warriors need to do, because now you're getting guys like not just Wiseman, but if Andrew Wiggins is here to stay, he's not Andre Iguodala. He's not Sean Livingston. He's an athletic player. He's productive for them. He's having a consistent year for the Warriors, but he's not high basketball feel playmaker the way that Livingston Iguodala was. But he thrives cutting off the basket, making, you know, he's shooting 40% this year. Just it both too if you run a more simple sort of pick and roll initiating offense too. And so if you Klay Thompson, when he comes back, like, what's he going to look like? I don't know. Do you really want him after 2 lower body injuries running around the arc and doing all these things and lateral movement and all that stuff? No, maybe it's bad that he at least starts off parked in the corner and just becomes one of the best three point shooters in the league. Like that's a useful player, at least at first, until he kind of gets his rhythm back. So I would hope that they go in that direction, but anybody's guess is as good as mine.
Do you think anyone on this team is really frustrated with Kelly Oubre right now?
No, I don't think so. There's been an understanding that this is sort of a marriage of convenience. They were not going to use that trade exception that they used to acquire Kelly Oubre if Klay Thompson hadn't gotten hurt. Like, they were just never going to use it. They were going to just let that thing expire. And so when they ultimately made the move for Oubre, shout out to Danny Ainge. When they used that trade exception to acquire Oubre, it was like, all right, cool. Like you trade a draft pick, you get a guy who can fill in for Klay Thompson at shooting guard, who's on an expiring contract, who you're probably not gonna be able to re-sign. They opted not to trade him at the deadline, even if they could have gotten something, you know, a worse player, but maybe a player who is under contract for next year. I think there's an understanding that Oubre has an opportunity as a free agent to go find something for himself. And I don't think anybody should blame him. Like, just because he's saying things like, hey, I want to be a starter, like, he has loyalty to Golden State. Like, he has not been here very long. He hasn't even been here a full year. He considers it home. And I think there's an understanding that he can go out and get money this offseason. He can get $15 to $20 million potentially out there. Like, this is not a great free agent market. And guys with his side at his position are coveted. And he's going to want a starting job, which, again, you can't blame him for. This is a guy who's a lottery pick, spent most of his career coming off the bench for bad teams, finally broke through into Phoenix, and now starting again this year in Golden State. He's not going to want to go from 2 straight years of starting after going most of his career coming off the bench to go central. You can't blame him. The money's going to be out there in New Orleans, which is his hometown. Dallas, Miami, like teams that were hoarding cap space. Giannis signed the extension. He's not going to be anymore. They're going to be flush with cash. Oubre's going to be able to go out as an unrestricted free agent and just pick his spot for the most part. And so I don't think anybody blames him for that. That's a legit excuse to walk away and find like a situation for a guy who's not really found a stable situation his whole career so far.
Why are they Mannion believers? Can you explain the Mannion stuff to me? Because whenever I watch him, I don't really understand what he's good at. And when I look for a backup league guard, and this was something the Hawks have struggled to find behind Trae Young, it's a tough thing. Yeah. And they had this convenient alternative to Steph Curry and Sean Livingston, who's one of the just the best all-time third, like second unit leader you can find. Mannion, like I'll read those reports. I think it was a couple weeks ago now. Just like Mannion, they believe in him as a backup point guard. And I watch these games, and I'm like, I don't understand this. Why are we committing to Nico Mannion? What is he actually good at? He plays hard. He's got the grit. It's just when you watch him, you write stuff down. You're like, oh. Wait, let's see. Is it an Arizona maybe connection with Steve Kerr? Is that it? Do they have something over the Warriors' head? I don't understand the Mannion stuff because I just don't know what he's good at. And I think if you're going to have guys at the bench who play meaningful minutes, you want to have, like, especially as a guy who runs a second unit really well, like he's really good at one particular thing. And I'm not sure if he's really good at one particular thing. Is that a fair assessment or fair critique? Because I think he stinks, and that's something I've written down watching these games. I'm like, I don't understand this. I don't get it.
Well, first of all, he's the U.S. ambassador for Parmesan cheese, so he's got that for him.
Yes,
so that's a big. So you can't discount that. You failed to mention it. But you're right. You and I think have the same theory when it comes to backup point guards. If we're talking about like a traditional point guard type, either you've got to be really good at something, and that something better be offense oriented, right? That something better be scoring, because so often a traditional backup point guard is giving up a lot on the defensive end. There are very few point guards in the league who are positive contributors to the defensive end. I mean, there's not a lot of Marcus Smarts and Chris Dunns, right?
Yeah.
And unless you can guard your position at an elite level, then all right, well, then you better be doing enough to make up for what you're giving up on that end, because it's so easy to just go out and get more of a combo guard type who provides more length and more on the defense, who can be a positive on defense, and who can ball handle, and maybe, you know, when your lead point guard's not in there, when a Steph Curry type is not in there anymore, who's an obvious plus on offense. That you do more of a committee type of approach to running your offense. And a lot of teams have gone that direction. And I think fans have a hard time reconciling that. They're like, who's our backup point guard? It's like, just everybody is. You don't need a backup point guard.
Yeah.
And so for a guy like Nico Mannion, who is small, who isn't the greatest athlete, who doesn't really score, never really did outside of that year in high school.
Yeah.
But wasn't a great shooter at Arizona. That shot looks really off at the NBA level.
Yep.
He's a good facilitator, but in the way that he's just careful. He's not making plays for you. He's just not turning the ball over a ton. Mm-hmm. It's pretty telling that his stint in that second unit didn't last very long. That he basically played a couple of weeks, and then Steve Kerr turned the second unit offense over to Jordan Poole, who was more of a combo guard, not a traditional point guard. Gives a little bit more size. He added, you know, a bunch of muscle this offseason, and it gives you a little bit more length, a little bit more athleticism, and so he's able to guard guys in a way that Nico Mannion isn't, even though he's still not a huge positive on that end, but he's progressing, and obviously there's a scoring element there. He averaged almost 18 points per game over a couple of weeks, so that's something that Nico Mannion's not bringing to the table. So I don't know that – like there's been some propagandizing of, hey, Nico Mannion could be our long-term point guard, whatever. I think there's stuff there that they do indeed like. Like they like the innate playmaking feel that he has for the game. They like that he takes care of the ball. But unless he makes a dramatic leap between years one and two, he's not going to be anything more than a 15th guy, a guy who maybe is on one of your two-way contracts or something like that. But Jordan Poole's done enough, right, where – he's probably your backup point guard. I don't know. Like, again, I don't know if you're the Warriors. You need a traditional backup point guard. It could be Jordan Poole and maybe a couple of guys that you sign this offseason who anchor that second unit, and then you'll be fine.
Yeah. I think a lot about Klay coming back next year and just like where the Warriors are, even without Klay and injuries and stuff. Like, it's just been a weird year for them. But you think about it and you're like, they're fighting for a playoff spot in the West, and you look at the top of the West and who is likely to take a step back next year, and it's just, it's hard to see the Nuggets, the Jazz, the Lakers, the Clippers, any of these teams taking any kind of serious step back, in the Suns too, where I'm like, okay, if the Warriors really want to get back in contention, because they just like penciled in contention if Klay is healthy this year, and I'm like, oh, I think we're seeing that like that probably was not even close to being on the table, and they probably have to do more. And this is something I wrote about a few weeks ago about the Andrew Wiggins stuff, is that like, when they're gone, when Klay's gone, when Draymond's gone, like that money has to be, like the money that is going to Draymond and Wiggins is just so much, and they're getting so little offensively there. And then with Wiseman and not using the number two pick for another guy who can help Steph Curry win now, I'm like, they're quietly facing a very difficult crossroads, and I don't know if I necessarily believe in the direction where they're going and some choices they made as of late, and it's hard. They also deserve the benefit of the doubt because they've won multiple titles and they built maybe the best offense in NBA history and like the death lineup and all that great stuff. I don't think they're even close to contending even when Klay comes back. I also just don't know what else they do, because Wiggins' trade value just, I'm sure, is pretty awful, and it's going to be hard to figure that out. But I just think that's too much money. And Wiseman, like you said, missing the end of the season, what he'll be, and it's just not feasible to me. Like, I don't see Klay making all that much of a difference, and I think they're going to be very close to where they are this year, which is like maybe not necessarily like playing game like number 10, number 9, but like number 7, maybe. Like, they're not going to be in the top half of the Western Conference, even as good as Steph Curry has been, and he like theoretically replaces does this again next year. I don't know. It sucks because I love Steph Curry and I love watching this Warriors team excel on all levels, but like, I don't believe in it. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think you're spot on. It's what I've been arguing the whole season too. I think Bob Myers came out at the trade deadline and said the hardest part about the season is that it's tough to evaluate this team without Klay Thompson. And to a certain extent, he's right. I guess, you know, what kind of returns are you getting from Andrew Wiggins when he goes from a second option to a third option or a fourth option or whatever we want to call it on offense, right? Like, what kind, is that a diminishing return, or do you get better returns because he's asked to do less? Like, I don't know. Does the fact that Draymond Green scores 0 points a game hurt so much if you have got Klay Thompson coming back? The spacing that Klay Thompson brings obviously has a ripple effect on everything that happens. And so, I get it. But also, like, it's not like you're getting another Steph Curry back. It's not like you're getting Kevin Durant back. It's not like you're getting Klay Thompson, who's a really, really good player, but I don't know that he's a guy who's carrying a team. This is more of like a Chris Middleton type, right? And those are useful players, like kind of the same level. And this is, again, if Klay Thompson comes back 100% of what he was, which you can't assume that he will. I don't know, man. I don't know what it looks like. But do know this, the talent drain and the basketball IQ drain that's happened to these Warriors extends way beyond Klay Thompson. Let's remember, you had Klay Thompson, Draymond Green, Steph Curry, and Kevin Durant. Who did you replace Kevin Durant with? In a roundabout way, you ended up replacing him with Andrew Wiggins. Fine, you got something where out of nothing, Durant could have just left in free agency. That was a good move to turn his walking away into D'Angelo Russell, into Andrew Wiggins, and a Minnesota pick. Like, that was the best thing this front office has done since Durant left and since Klay had that first injury. But outside of that, I don't know that you can chalk anything up as a success for this front office. And I know that sounds harsh, but the James Wiseman thing, it's still up in the air. We don't know if that was the right pick or not. I'm not ready to make any sort of conclusions with that. But you look at signings that they've made. I mean, you go out this offseason, you go acquire Kelly Oubre because you had to, but you weren't going to use that trade exception if Klay didn't get hurt. So I don't really count that as a win. Chad Wanamaker, Kent Bazemore, those were your signings. Like, last year, you're talking about guys like Glenn Robinson, Willie Cauley-Stein, and Alec Burks. This team's track record for signing veterans has not been stellar. Right, Brad Wanamaker, that really hurt them this year, much as anything else, you know, other than Klay getting hurt, because that was a guy who you signed thinking, hey, this could be our sixth man, and he was out of the rotation by the time you traded him with cash, like you paid to get off of him. That's a fail, and you go into this offseason, yeah, sure, you're gonna get Klay Thompson back, yeah, sure, James Wiseman makes a year one to year two leap, whatever that looks like, but what else? Because you don't have Iguodala and Livingston coming off the bench. You don't have any real depth on this team. You've got four or five guys who you really trust on this roster where you look at teams like Phoenix and Utah, they've got Denver, they've got nine guys who can play. The Warriors are not even close to that, and they don't really have the means to go out and get those guys. You're paying your top guys a ton of money. Draymond Green is in the first year of a huge extension. Klay Thompson has not even played a game since his extension kicked in for over $30 million. Steph Curry is going to be eligible for another extension that's going to pay him $50 million a year. Like they're paying, not to even mention Wiggins, who's making almost 30. So they're paying their top guys a lot of money. You're not getting, other than Steph Curry, the returns on that investment right now. You're sort of paying them for the past productivity and resumes. So you really need to hit on the fringes. Toronto has given me no confidence that they can hit on these fringe moves, and but they're going to have to if they want to get to where it is that they want to go. Otherwise, Chase, you're right. They're probably they're a top heavy team that sneaks into the playoffs and.
All right, we're back on the Chase Thomas podcast, and I'm now joined by someone who covers a very, very interesting Michigan football team at the moment. It is Anthony Broom of Maize and Brew. Anthony, good afternoon, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's funny you describe them as interesting because it's been one of the quietest and least interesting off seasons that, well, at least, you know, in terms of spring football that they've had in a while. So, but there's always something going on. Might be a way I would put it. So it's good to be here. Good to chat with you, and happy to address whatever comes up.
Well, I wanted to focus on, and this is the reason I described them as interesting, is that we know what happened with the Harbaugh contract. We know that the uncertainty there has been resolved. We know about the turnover on the defensive side of the ball. We know about some recruiting wins that they've had this winter, which was kind of a surprise. We know that Josh Gattis is sticking around. We know some of that stuff. There were some transfers that I want to get to, but I want to start because I have no idea where their quarterback battle is going to go, because they're watching Michigan in the fall and watching just the different quarterbacks cycling in. They kind of remind me of LSU and what LSU went through this fall and cycling through different guys who were talented in their own ways, but not really sure if they're like the quarterback you want to build around, and also like, is this the kind of offense you want to build around, and like what's all going on here? But in your estimation, Anthony, who is the leader right now in the clubhouse at quarterback for Michigan?
Yeah, it sounds like it's Cade McNamara. He and JJ McCarthy were the two guys that allegedly started the spring game. Again, it wasn't open to fans or the media, so we're kind of just going on what they said.
Why was
things
that?
Like that, but I mean, well, part of it is, I think, still the pandemic thing. Cases have kind of gone back up in Michigan. So I think that there was, you know, in terms of not being open to fans, I certainly get that. But the fact that it wasn't live streamed or televised or even open to select media members, to me, that speaks to, I don't know what that speaks to. Now, I've had people ask me, what does that mean? Why do they do it? I have no idea. And that's not the best answer, for chatting on a podcast with, you know,
someone
who covers the team, but it is what it is. I mean, it's, you know how football coaches are, they tend to act like they're guarding the nuclear launch codes. Jim Harbaugh has been a little more guarded than even that, but even more so, you know, as every kind of off season passes. And last year there was no spring football because of the pandemic, we get all that, but disappointing that, you know, again, there's just, and at the end of the day, I'm kind of processing this in real time here, but it's probably a net positive for everyone involved, because Michigan has kind of been a victim of the off-season hype machine ever since Harbaugh got there. You know, he gets there, he shows up as kind of a carnival barker, so to speak, where step right up, see what we're doing. You know, we want to operate like the NFL's 33rd team, and, you know, some of the satellite camps, the antics on the recruiting trail. And it has not, I mean, this is year seven. It hasn't materialized into the bigger stuff yet. Now they've had 9 and 10 win seasons, which is, I think that's fine. Those are, to me, good years in college football. If you want to call, I don't know if you can call them great years, but they're good mostly healthy years, except for when you get blasted by the best teams on your schedule. But it's just, like I said, it all kind of boils down to, I really do think this program did need kind of a quiet spring. It's just disappointing because, you know, for like, I get asked to come on your podcast and you want me to kind of break down what happened in spring football. We don't have a ton to give you. And media doesn't have a ton to give you unless you're paying, you know, $9.99 a month on, you know, subscription sites or something. And even then it's just hearsay and kind of generalizations and things like that. So, it is a bummer because it is an important off season. It's an important season for them given, you know, Jim Harbaugh gets an extension, but there's not, it doesn't feel like it's stability on paper. It doesn't feel like stability because of the way that the contract was structured. But, again, well, I've went on a rant here. This was all about the quarterbacks, but yeah, that's long story short, Cade McNamara, when he was healthy, was going to have the job the rest of the year last year. And I think right now, from everything we're being told, J.J. McCarthy has looked good, a five-star kid, a freshman.
Yeah.
Very much going through some of those freshman ups and downs. And it's spring football. Like, of course it's going to happen. So I don't think anyone's pulled away. I think both guys are probably in the mix, and you'll see what happens from there.
That's interesting. With Cade McNamara, what did you see down the stretch that would inspire you as a Michigan fan that, like, this could be the guy who gets us on the level of Ohio State, or maybe not even just on the level, but actually will let us compete more what we're accustomed to, and maybe he has a better grasp of the Gattis offense and the other options? Like, what is it that about Cade McNamara that would give him the edge over JJ outside of experience, but also just like, do you think fans would accept Cade McNamara for a full season?
I think that, you know, this is, yeah, the experience is definitely a big thing. This is his third year in Gattis's offense, so that's good. And the thing of it is, like, we still don't really know what the offensive philosophy is. Now, it came along at the tail end of 2019, but still, again, you know, just haven't seen a ton of, in terms of a consistent identity on a drive-to-drive basis or anything like that. But what I like about McNamara, and I think what a lot of Michigan fans like about him, is that when he was pressed into duty last year, he simply, and this might be setting the bar low, but he just simply ran the offense and made the throws that were open and did just the baseline things that you expect a college passer to do. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that you could make the argument up until that point, he was probably the most college-ready passer, that Jim Harbaugh had recruited. A lot of those other guys were, you know, four-star guys still, but extremely raw, and it's disappointing that none of them really amounted to anything and didn't become those multiple-year guys. But Cade McNamara came in, and he ran the offense, and he made the throws, and I think the best thing that you can say about him is that he in the limited film we have of him, because it's really about a game and a half.
Yeah.
He moved the football. And
are we talking about Stetson Bennett or Cade McNamara?
You know, it's hard to tell. It's hard to tell sometimes because you have your stars in college football, and then you have, like, you know, these other guys who, you know, slap a name on the back of their jersey and they're pretty much the same guy. But yeah, I think he can run the offense. Mm. I think if he's the starter, I think your best case scenario is obviously J.J. McCarthy winning the job, because that just means this kid's ready. And he might take his lumps, but it means he's ready to play and ready to go, which, you know, let's call it what it is. I mean, I assume, given that Harbaugh has been given an extension, that this probably means this is more of a 2-year window than it is, you know, you have to win this year or you're gone. But, you know, J.J. McCarthy is probably the biggest piece in that. So if he's able to come in and play right away, I think that's absolutely huge for them. But Cade McNamara, I think, is a good – I think he can be a good – I think he can be good. Not great, probably 9-3, 10-2 caliber ceiling like the other guys have been, but I think he could be fine. But, you know, obviously the best-case scenario is McCarthy over these next couple months they have between spring football and then fall camp, is that – you know, he cleans some things up and he gets there and he's he's ready to be the guy, because that's kind of started, like, if you're a five-star guy, a lot of those guys are playing right away now. It's not like it used to be where you got to wait and pay your dues for 2 or 3 years. Now, I think to a certain extent, the way that this program is run, that they still kind of have that mindset. But if he's the best guy, like, I'm sorry, he's got to be on the field. So the one thing I will say, and he wasn't in spring camp yet, but Alan Bowman transferred in from Texas Tech. I think, you know, he's another guy who started games in the Big 12, you know, raises the, at least maybe the floor of that quarterback room a little bit. I would say him winning the, like, I don't know much about him. So for me,
I mean,
to say
he's good job, when he's healthy, but that dude has not been healthy in 2 years now. Like, that guy is a full on wild card. And just at this point, there's enough data where it's like, this dude just might be very injury prone.
That's kind of the book on him. Right. And that's, here's the thing about, like, if he comes in and wins the job, I don't want to call it worst case scenario is a sinkhole swallows up your entire quarterback room and you're running the Wildcat. Right. But if he comes in and starts games, it's, you know, if in terms of the ranking, he's probably the third guy you'd want to see starting games for them. So we'll see. I think that's kind of where the quarterback stuff stands with them. It's just, again, I really think that this is a really important offseason in terms of just figuring out what you are offensively. Mm-hmm. Because last year was, I mean, we'll call it what it is. Last year was a joke, and they were bad on both sides of the ball, and it doesn't help establish an offensive identity when after two drives, you're already down 14-0. But yeah, like I said, being steadfast in what you are and letting your best guys just play is, I think those are things that could be very positive for Michigan.
What happened with Joe Milton? If you had to articulate what happened and why he's in the portal right now and why it didn't work, and especially because of what we saw early on, it's like, oh, they got their guy. And then it was, oh, no, they don't. Very much do not. What happened with Joe Milton?
That's a loaded question. I mean, the talent was obviously there. I mean, they first game of the year, they go to Minnesota, they play on Saturday Night Football, and they look, the offense looks excellent.
Yeah.
He's executing. You see the big arm. You see his ability to affect the run game in the things he's able to do, the QB power runs and things like that. And then it just didn't, that was it. It just, there was nothing after that. Missed a lot of throws, was inconsistent. And that was kind of the book on him coming out. He's a guy who could hardly complete, and I'm not, you know, dogging on him, but this was the scouting report. He barely completed 50% of his passes in high school. He had, you know, the Uncle Rico type arm, right?
He could
throw a pigskin a quarter mile. But it's just those other things. Like, a lot of the game is how quickly you process things and what you see and you know, hitting the open guy 4 or 5 yards down the field, not necessarily even the deep ball. So it's just, I think that he was, and I think that he has a chance to, you know, still be a starting quarterback somewhere. But I just don't think the game slowed down enough for him. Now, physically, he looked the part. Leadership-wise, I know the guys were rallying around him, but you can make all the dazzling plays in practice, but you got to bring it to Saturday. And outside of one game last year, he didn't bring it on Saturdays. And that's, you know, I'll put it this way. When you get benched against Rutgers, that's probably the worst look you could probably have. And that's when Cade McNamara takes over and, like I said, plays a game and a half, then he gets injured, and then the season kind of ends because of COVID within the program. So to diagnose, like, there are probably things there that we'll never understand about what went wrong. I know there was some kind of injury, I believe some kind of hand injury that he dealt with. There were hand or shoulder injuries, something upper body related, but it just didn't come together. And that's, you know, that's kind of been the MO on any of the guys that have come through recruiting wise at the quarterback position in the last 4 or 5 years.
Interesting. And I think he's still in the portal, but I don't think he's actually announced where he's going. So that's probably not the best sign that we're in April 12th and that hasn't come out yet. That's kind of odd. Do you still think Josh Gattis is the guy at OC for Michigan?
I think there's a good play caller there somewhere. I really do, because they started to cook at the end of that 2019 season. And I know a lot of people dogged on Shea Patterson and, you know, the wide receivers. You know, you get a wide receiver room that Nico Collins, a guy who's expected to be a day two pick this year. Donovan Peoples-Jones, who was productive as an NFL rookie. They had all these pieces there, and they start, you know, it was rough early on in that 2019 season, but it started to click, and they just, you know, it came together and it looked good. You know, Michigan is known for being that kind of pro style, you know, 3 yards at a time on the ground type of offense, but they kind of shifted to, they made a major shift to like a West Coast pro spread type of look. And last year, I mean, it starts with your quarterback, but they had a lot of problems last year with offensive line continuity and running the football. And it was just from top to bottom, it was just a complete disaster. So I don't know if it gets any better this year. But like I said, I know that Gattis is beloved in that locker room. I know that his track record when it comes to developing wide receivers, you look at the guys at Alabama speak for themselves. Most of them are pro ready at the prom, to be frank. But I think it's so hard to tell because when you diagnose the issues with the offense, it's more systematic. It's, you know, systemic in terms of how far up the ladder it goes than it is anything else. But yeah, I think Gattis is. I think he can be a good guy, but it's just they got to figure out who their guys are at their positions because they weren't consistently able to run the ball because they tried, you know, they had four or five good running backs. They wanted to get touches in there and it just they never settled. Like, no one ever had the chance to get hot because they kept cycling guys through. And I think to a certain extent at wide receiver, that was kind of the case too. So, yeah, it's just being a little more decisive in the play calling, in the personnel groupings and things like that. I do think that what he wants to do can work, but it just hasn't worked consistently enough, which is kind of the entire program in a nutshell right now.
Last thing, and we'll wrap up here. Who are the playmakers to watch heading into the spring and summer? Who are the guys that you're like, I can't wait to watch more of him in practice, and I'm excited to see this fall that people may not be familiar with?
Well, I'm excited to get any look at this team, to be frank with you, given that we haven't seen them at all, but you know, playmakers on offense and defense. I mean, I'll start on offense. I think Blake Corum at running back can be a guy. Blake Corum and I mean, not to a lesser extent, but Blake Corum and Donovan Edwards are both versatile guys who, you know, I think can have a little bit of juice in the running game, can eke out some extra yards, can catch the ball out of the backfield. I still would expect Hassan Haskins to be the number one, and he should be, you know, in terms of, you know, power runner guy on the goal line. He's probably the closest thing they have to a bell cow right now, but those are the guys I look for there. On the defensive side of the ball, to me, it's Daxton Hill, former five-star guy at safety. He played a little bit of cornerback last year. I do think he's kind of got a little bit of that Minka Fitzpatrick, Derwin James type of skill set to his game, and playing in a new system, I'm really going to be interested in seeing how, you know, how they use him and what effect he has on the game. I think he's probably right now, outside of Aiden Hutchinson, their best defensive player. And both of those guys, I think, are NFL guys and maybe even round one guys. So they're not totally bereft of talent on either side of the ball. It's just a matter of a lot of guys growing up quickly and things coming together. So I don't know what that means for the ceiling, but you know, I'm excited to see what those guys do when they get back on the field.
All right. What can we check out from you this week at Mason Brew or anywhere else, Anthony?
Well, we're continuing to put a bow on basketball season. A little bit of fallout the best we can from spring football. Draft season is heating up, so we're getting our draft profiles out so we can pass them all along to our NFL teams and, you know, continued podcasts and video content and you name it, we do it over there. So over at MasonBrew.com. So again, yeah, feel free to check us out. We're trying to be a one-stop shop for a lot of those things. So we'd love to have your eyeballs on our product.
All right. Well, go do that if you have not already, folks. Anthony, keep up the great work and stay safe out there, my friend.
All right. Thanks for having me. Anytime.
Nicely done, nephew. Chase Thomas Podcast. Hell yeah. Breaking up is hard to do, but when it comes to your wireless carrier, you should have left a while ago. You're over the big three carriers. You deserve better. Xfinity Mobile. Now you can get unlimited with 5G included for just $30 a month on the nation's fastest, most reliable network. So break free from the big three and save with Xfinity Mobile.
Take the savings challenge at xfinitymobile.com/mysavings to see how much you can save when you get Xfinity Mobile and internet together. Reduced speeds at 20 gigabytes per line. Most reliable based on Root Metrics U.S. report. Results vary, not an endorsement.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.